Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Welcome to prayer meeting night, Wednesday night on the Malloy program. Not going to be a whole lot of religion tonight, I'm afraid. We've been just beating the hell out of it, so to speak, the last couple of days. Maybe a little bit later on the program. Regarding the Susan G. Komen Foundation story that broke last night and was handed off to us early by Reg at tvnewslies.org. It certainly has caused a bit of an uproar in this country today. Except one thing I noticed, I was really, really surprised. ABC News tonight, their 6 or 7 o'clock broadcast or whatever it is, with Diane Sawyer, not a mention, not a single word about it. Which I just thought was kind of odd. Maybe tonight on Nightline. But the emails have been pouring in. I just want to share two with you. This is from Rick in Ormond Beach, Florida, longtime podcast subscriber. He identifies himself. He writes, I usually listen to your podcast the next day so I can hear everything without the fog of sleep hovering over me at night. Yeah, I have that same problem, Rick. I want to thank you for your show last night in which you informed us regarding the Susan G. Komen Foundation and its despicable act of defunding Planned Parenthood breast cancer screening opportunities for women whose economic situation may not be like Mitt Romney's. My wife is a breast cancer survivor, and the thing that helped most was an early detection through a mammogram and MRI. Luckily, we have decent health insurance, and we could afford those tests. My concern is towards those who do not have the means to pay for the tests or pay for the health insurance needed for such things. I guess this is once again a cave-in towards those so-called pro-lifers who feel that the fetal mass is more important than a possibly fatal breast mass in living and breathing women. Rick in Ormond Beach. And from Diana, Mike, I'm listening to last night's podcast about the Komen Foundation cutting off funds to Planned Parenthood. Republican Cliff Stearns is my congressional representative here in Gainesville, Florida. This will be far from the first time I've telephoned and emailed him expressing my displeasure at something he's done, but I don't recall ever being as emotionally upset while doing so. I donated an extra $100 to Planned Parenthood today beyond my usual support and told him he was the reason. Probably because Gainesville is a university town and the city constitutes the majority of the population in this county, Democrats outnumber Republicans nearly 2-1, which means we are often an island of blue in a sea of red during presidential elections. What has always puzzled me, though, is how we keep ending up with a Republican representative in Congress. Cliff Stearns has been our representative since 1988. And I have always voted against him. Could it be the Diebold scanners used to scan for ballots? Diana in Florida. Yeah, I had forgotten that this freak was Stearns was the representative in from Gainesville. That's where the University of Florida is. And a friend of mine, Gary Gordon, who now lives in where does he lives in L.A., outside of L.A. He lives lived in Venice Beach for a while. Sometimes you listen to the program. If you're listening tonight, hi, Gary. Gary used to be the mayor of Gainesville, Florida, back in the day. This is back in the late 70s. And the way you become mayor of Gainesville, at least then, you get elected to city council, and then the mayor is a rotating situation. They don't vote for mayor. They just vote for city council, and the council members elect a mayor. And when Gary was the mayor of Gainesville, there were all kinds of reforms that were put into effect regarding libraries and coffee houses and lower taxes. And those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end, right? So anyway, in all that, just in reference to what Diana wrote about her upset at her representative and the fact that somehow they get an extreme right winger like this. And remember, it's Stearns. It's this representative from Gainesville who has started what he calls an investigation, which is not that. It's further harassment of Planned Parenthood. He has opened an investigation into where the money comes from, where the money goes, to Planned Parenthood. Why don't they open an investigation of Susan G. Komen Foundation, whose CEO steals $500,000 from breast cancer research from people who take their pink teddy bears and their pink ribbons and go walking for the Susan G. Komen Foundation, contributing hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars to this foundation that now, thanks to Karen Handel, who is one of their officers on the board of the Susan Komen Foundation, and we know her real well here in the Atlanta area, she would make Newt Gingrich look like a liberal. When she ran for governor, Sarah Palin came down to stump speech for her. She is a stupid woman to begin with, and then she compounds that stupidity with the fact that she's an extreme religious right-winger. And when she ran for governor of Georgia, she made repeated threats that if she were elected, she would defund Planned Parenthood. No more state money, and she would do everything in her power to end any kind of funding for Planned Parenthood in the state of Georgia. So she was not elected. Somehow, this failed. And I'm telling you, she's just an ignoramus. If you listen to this woman talk, you just kind of, we're used to this here in Georgia, though. Trust me, we have a governor who couldn't find his ass with both hands. We have a legislature that is just, redneck from top to bottom. You ought to hear the Speaker of the Georgia House. I say hear him because you can't understand him.
Well, I'll tell you what now. We're going to check him in Trinidad, Paul, because of what you won't want.
You know, he makes Haley Barbour sound articulate. He makes Jeff Sessions sound like a locution expert. But anyway, I digress again. Karen Handel, who threatened to end funding for Planned Parenthood in Georgia, set herself up to end funding for Planned Parenthood at the Susan G. Komen Foundation. Shame on you, Susan Komen Foundation, and your founder who died of breast cancer, or not your founder, but the person in whose name you give out pink teddy bears and take money in her name, Susan Komen, is probably spitting in her grave because of what you've done. Curse on all of you. Or am I? I don't want to get off on that again. It's just so infuriating. This story is not over. Trust me on that. And I've got to mention, Don Cornelius has committed suicide. The creator and the host of Soul Train. According to the New York Times, the police responded to reports of gunshots at his Sherman Oaks, California home. They found Cornelius with a gunshot wound to the head that appeared to be self-inflicted. I don't know, gunshots, plural, I don't know. Apparently he was in not very good health. He was 75 years old. Soul Train, for those of us of a certain age, Soul Train, which began in 1971, I believe, is the longest running nationally syndicated show in television history, from 1971 through 2006. And even though 1971, I was still in my 20s. And I enjoyed that show so much. That was where you didn't. If you're a white person, and you're interested in hipness as it was defined in the 70s, you didn't really look at Dick Clark. You didn't look at Hullabaloo. You went to Soul Train. Don Cornelius dead at the age of 75. We'll be right back.
Radical Talk Radio, it's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. You know, I don't want to make a big issue out of this because, but it keeps coming up. I keep getting some emails about this, about Girl Scout cookies. All right, now let me just set everybody straight. About 5 years ago, the manufacturer of Girl Scout cookies realized that palm oil was included in the list of ingredients, and that the palm oil was coming from areas of the world that threatened the natural habitat of orangutans. So, believe it or not, even though there are websites that haven't straightened this out yet, believe it or not, the palm oil used in the production of Girl Scout cookies now come from sustainable growth that has absolutely nothing to do with orangutans. As a matter of fact, Kathy, you don't have to turn on your mic, most of it comes from Australia now. And the last time I checked, there are no orangs in Australia. So to everybody who sends me emails about, oh, well, you know, you're pushing something that's destroying the earth. No, we're not. And as far as the ingredients, before you start condemning these cookies, for God's sake, get a box. Look at the list of ingredients. There are no trans fats. There are no nasty things inside. There used to be, as there were in all cookies, but not anymore. So, for the people who have been emailing me repeatedly about trans fat or about palm oil and that it's destroying the natural habitat of orangs, and therefore Girl Scout cookies are doing their part to eliminate natural habitat for an endangered species, please stop, because it's simply not so. Now, I realize that there are websites out there who still report it as such. And they're wrong. It's that simple. Okay? Okay. Now, if you have an issue about palm oil where it concerns your heart, that's up to you. But according to Kathy, the amount used in these cookies is minimal. That's all. I don't want to take showtime to talk about this, but I just keep getting these emails about, threatening the natural habitat of orangs. They don't. Thank you very much. Good night. Oh, wait a minute. All right. The San Onofre, is that how you pronounce it in California? Nuclear plant closed. That's right north of San Diego, right near the Pendleton Marine Base, I believe. Camp Pendleton. According to a spokesman for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which does not regulate the nuclear industry. As a matter of fact, the NRC is just a organization that shills for the nuclear industry. It's horrible. But a spokesman for the NRC said the radiation levels were barely measurable, but the plant was shut down as a precaution. And Southern California Edison spokesman Gil Alexander told ABC News, at no point were the public or our workers in any danger. So this is the second one in a couple of days in Illinois. A nuclear plant was it closed? One of two reactors at the Byron nuclear power plant shut down after a transformer supplying electricity to the plant failed. You know, this stuff is falling apart. Some of these nuclear reactors have been online for 20, 30, 40 years. They don't have that kind of a life expectancy. We are heading for a Fukushima-level event in this country. We are. It's coming. Only there's a difference. Our big nuclear power plants, for the most part, are not located in rural areas as the Fukushima Daiichi plant was. I don't mean rural. I mean small town. I saw on the news tonight that there are 7 million people within a 30-mile radius of the San Onofre, is that how you say it, nuclear power plant. The one in Illinois is how far north of Chicago? Somewhere between Chicago and Milwaukee, for God's sake. One of these things is going to go. You know it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. In the meantime, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, being run by nuclear industry selections, are doing nothing to prevent what is going to be a catastrophic event in this country. So the second one, in a matter of days, where, no problem. Gary Hedrick is part of the environmental group San Clemente Green and lives just 8 miles from this reactor. He said if we don't make them shut it down, it's going to be too late. And San Onofre is one of dozens of U.S. reactors facing scrutiny after the Japan nuclear crisis. We'll be right back.
Be prepared to meet the Lord. When the mushroom of destruction falls, there is a shielding sword. He will surely stand beside you, and you'll never tell.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malone.
25 before the hour. Regarding these nuclear power plants, in a report issued yesterday by the NRC, 96 reactors in the central and southern United States are in regions at a higher risk for quakes than previously thought. what does that mean, than previously thought? Well, I guess it's because 30 years ago when these plants were built, perhaps the seismic the testing equipment, you know, how much, what is the percentage chance that there's going to be an earthquake in this part of the country, was not as precise as it is now. Or, you know, nuclear energy was supposed to be just absolutely safe and so cheap you could be hardly worth time to put a meter in your house. Remember all those lies? Ah, I do. I remember that. Oh, my God. I remember when I was a kid talking about all electric homes and it was going to be run by nuclear energy. And nuclear energy was so cheap that it would be practically free. Anyway, the report says that there are parts of the country that are not traditionally seen as geologically active, where there are nuclear reactors nearby, like Chattanooga, Tennessee, Savannah, Georgia, Jackson, Mississippi, Manchester, New Hampshire, Houston, Texas, and major metropolitan areas are real close to these nuclear plants. The Union of Concerned Scientists, which probably really put out the report, said as many as 120 million Americans live within 50 miles of a nuclear reactor. Indian Point, outside of New York City, has 20 million people within a 50-mile radius. And the Dresden plant is just 50 miles from the heavily populated suburbs of Chicago. Now, nuclear regulators had planned to give plant operators 4 years to reevaluate seismic risks. 4 years. 4 years?
Well, of course, Mike, you know, these things have to be done. We have to check the science. We have to check the science again and again and again. And once we decide that it's in a highly seismic area, there will be Republicans who will say, no, it's not. You can't trust the science. look what's happening with nuclear. I'm sorry, what they call global warming. Do you realize over in Serbia, people are dying from the cold? So global warming is nonsense. Creation, as described by paleoanthropologists, is nonsense. More on that later on tonight, by the way. and the stuff about seismic risks, that's nonsense, too. So take 4 years, then we'll give you another four, and then another four. You know how it goes. But here's the truth. Some of the plants may be too expensive to make earthquake safe. You understand that? The plants, as they were constructed 30, 40 years ago, leave them in a situation where it would be impossible financially to make them safe. So what? Right? It doesn't matter. Hey, it doesn't matter. Nobody cares? Woohoo! Let's get on with it. What's next on the agenda here? Well, let's see here. 96 nuclear reactors? Oh, well. How often do these transformers? Oh, the one in Illinois. The reason that one of the areas was shut down, one of the reactors, because plant workers saw the transformer located in the plant switchyard release smoke after it's failed. Firefighters, when they got there, found nothing burning. During the shutdown, the plant vented steam containing tritium, a radioactive form of hydrogen, but the release represented no health threat, according to NRC officials and plant officials. No health threat. No. Public safety was never in danger. Forget it. No threat. How often does the transformer fail at a U.S. nuclear plant? Well, according to a nuclear engineer currently tracking nuclear safety issues for the Union of Concerned Scientists, about 6 to 8 times a year. Not to worry, though. Not to worry. From Brian and Audrey, Mike, my husband and I have been listening to you on the radio since 2004. We were there when you announced that you and Kathy were going to have your baby. We lived in Utah then. Then we moved to California and listened to you there. And then we moved to Maui and listened to you there. And now we live in Pennsylvania and are still listening. My daughter sent me a site that contains many letters from famous people and this very interesting one written by an ex-slave to his ex-master. Please read it as it is so interesting, especially towards the end. Read it on your program, if you will. Thank you, Brian and Audrey. Now, this was, it comes from Library of Congress. It's the source is The Freedman's Book. And there are photographs in there. It's about a group of various slaves who escaped in 1862 from their masters. But I want you to hear this. This is from the Library of Congress. This is dated August 7th, 1865. To my old master, Colonel P.H. Anderson, Big Spring, Tennessee. Sir, I got your letter and was glad to find that you had not forgotten Jordan.
and that you wanted me to come back and live with you again, promising to do better for me than anybody else can. I've often felt uneasy about you. I thought the Yankees would have hung you long before this for harboring Rebs they found at your house. I suppose they never heard about your going to Colonel Martin's house to kill the Union soldier that was left by his company in their stable. Although you shot at me twice before I left you, I did not want to hear of your being hurt, and I'm glad you are still living. It would do me good to go back to the dear old home again and see Miss Mary and Miss Martha and Alan, Esther, Green, and Lee. Give my love to them all and tell them I hope we will meet in the better world, if not in this. I would have gone back to see you all when I was working in the Nashville hospital, but one of the neighbors told me that Henry intended to shoot me if he ever got the chance. I want to know particularly what the good chances you propose to give me. I am doing tolerably well here. I get $25 a month with victuals and clothing. I have a comfortable home for Mandy. The folks here call her Mrs. Anderson. And the children, Millie, Jane, and Grundy, go to school and are learning well. The teacher says Grundy has a head for a preacher. They go to Sunday school, and Mandy and me attend church regularly. We are kindly treated. Sometimes we overhear others saying, them colored people were slaves, down in Tennessee. The children feel hurt when they hear such remarks, but I tell them it was no disgrace in Tennessee to belong to Colonel Anderson. Many darkies would have been proud, as I used to be, to call you master. Now, if you will write and say what wages you will give me, I will be better able to decide whether it would be to my advantage to move back again. As to my freedom, which you say I can have, there is nothing to be gained on that score, as I got my free papers in 1864 from the Provost Marshal General of the Department of Nashville. Mandy says she would be afraid to go back without some proof that you were disposed to treat us justly and kindly. And we have concluded to test your sincerity by asking you to send us our wages for the time we served you. This will make us forget and forgive old scores and rely on your justice and friendship in the future. I served you faithfully for 32 years, and Mandy, 20 years. At $25 a month for me and $2 a week for Mandy, our earnings would amount to $11,680. Add to this the interest for the time our wages have been kept back, and deduct what you paid for our clothing and those three doctor visits you gave me and pulling a tooth for Mandy, and the balance will show what we are in justice entitled to. Please send the money by Adams Express in care of V. Winters Esquire, Dayton, Ohio. If you fail to pay us for faithful labors in the past, we can have little faith in your promises in the future. We trust the good Maker has opened your eyes to the wrongs which you and your fathers have done to me and my fathers in making us toil for you for generations without recompense. Here I draw my wages every Saturday night, but in Tennessee there was never any payday for the Negroes any more than for the horses and cows. Surely there will be a day of reckoning for those who defraud the laborer of his hire. In answering this letter, please state if there would be any safety for my Millie and Jane, who are now grown up, and both good-looking girls. You know how it was with poor Matilda and Catherine. I would rather stay here and starve and die, if it come to that, than have my girls brought to shame by the violence and wickedness of their young masters. You will also please state if there has been any schools open for the colored in your area. The great desire of my life now is to give my children an education and have them form virtuous habits. Say howdy to George Carter and thank him for taking the pistol from you when you were shooting at me. From your old servant, Jordan Anderson.
Lucky man he was.
Mike Malloy Show, because each time you listen to Right Wing Radio, God kills a kitten.
Well, today, Governor Mitch Daniels of Indiana, former budget director, I think he was budget director for George Bush, the terrorist. Mitch Daniels, who once said that he did not wish to add a so-called right to work provision to the state's labor laws, signed just such a bill today. The legislation, in effect, ends unionized collective bargaining work in Indiana. It makes Indiana the first state in more than a decade to enact this terrible legislation, and the only one in the Midwestern manufacturing belt to have such a law. Now, let me tell you the congratulations that were sent to Mitch Daniels and the Republican neo-fascist-controlled legislature. Where is it? Yeah, this is from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, which is a capitalist organization that is wholly funded by corporations and is anti-labor, anti-middle class, anti-woman, anti-family. The only thing that the competitive enterprise is in favor of is a continued degradation of the middle class and more money for the 1%. It's a lobbying organization. It has nothing to do with competition or enterprise, or I don't think you could call it an institute. It is a lobbying organization. This is what their press release says. Indiana today enacted a crucial, hard-fought right-to-work law prohibiting labor contracts that force workers to pay for union representation. Vince Vernuccio, the Competitive Enterprise Institute labor policy attorney, said, quote, Governor Daniels and the Indiana legislature put workers and choice first in passing the state's right-to-work law. Because of their efforts, Indiana now stands as a beacon of opportunity and freedom in the Midwest. Indiana will hopefully be the first of many of the now 27 forced unionism states to give workers the right to say no to union bosses and still keep their jobs, end quote. The Indiana Senate approved the legislation today, which was promptly signed by Governor Mitch Daniels. A beacon of opportunity. Indiana, are you listening? You are now a beacon of opportunity. Of course, the Competitive Enterprise Institute doesn't say for whom. A beacon of opportunity and freedom. I left off that part. In the Midwest, opportunity. The opportunity and the freedom to work for slave wages. To not have health care, to not have retirement, to not have paid holidays, to not have time and a half, to not have a 40-hour work week. Yes, by God, that's freedom. It is indeed. It is a beacon of freedom. An opportunity. How much longer before the American working class, the American middle class, says enough and starts to take matters into its own hands? How much before, or how much longer, how much more has to be stolen and taken and legislated away and then disguised as a beacon of opportunity and freedom before the American worker finally rebels, before the American middle class? I don't know. How many people have to, I've been asking this for 5 years. What does it take? I have no answer. I don't think anybody does. The American people seem content to be dominated by corporatists and religious freaks and right-wing politicians. I guess. I mean, is it comfortable? Does it feel good? I mean, do you really think it was Acorn that destroyed the housing market? Are you really that stupid? Do you really think that Planned Parenthood should be defunded because there's somebody on the board of the Susan G. Komen Foundation who is a right-wing monster? Do you really think this is good stuff? I mean, do you really think that all the legislatures and the governorship should be in the hands of Republicans who are slowly destroying you, your family, your children and grandchildren and your nieces and nephews and the ability to make a living? Is this really good for you? What do you want, Republican America? Is this revenge against women, against so-called minorities? Is it revenge against liberals? Are you doing something that your God wants you to do? Is this in your Bible? Is it in your religious tracts? Did you learn this from your parents? There's no point asking those questions. There really isn't. A spokesman for the Indiana AFL-CIO said Republicans are trying to make working men and women look like thugs. We'll be back after the break. We're going to open the phone lines, so if you'd like to jump in here and join us, the number is 877-996-2556. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. There was an event today. I've got it here in this stack of stuff. An event today. Oh, yeah. The Gasland producer and journalist, Josh Fox. He was the director of the Academy Award nominated documentary Gasland. He was taken into custody by Capitol Hill police this morning along with his crew. According to Huffington Post here, after Republicans objected to their presence, there was a meeting of the House Subcommittee on Energy and Environment. And Huffington Post at their site has a video of the arrest of Josh Fox. Representative Brad Miller, a Democrat from North Carolina, the ranking Democrat on the subcommittee, can be heard at the end of the clip asking the Republican chairman, Andy Harris, Republican of Maryland, to halt the arrest and permit Fox to film the public hearing. The Nazi Andy Harris denies Miller's request as Fox is escorted out of the hearing in handcuffs. Now, Gasland, as you know, if you've seen it, it's I believe it's available online. I've seen it. It's a stunning movie. It received, excuse me, strong critical acclaim. And what it does, it examines the process of fracking, hydraulic fracturing. And you know what that is. Tons of highly pressurized water and chemicals are injected in the ground, allowing valuable natural gas to escape, and in the process, polluting groundwater, setting up seismic vibrations that may or may not cause near to the surface quaking, if the term earthquake is a little bit overdramatic, quaking. It destroys ecosystems, it pollutes groundwater. And the energy industry keeps the actual content of these chemicals being injected into the ground a secret! Well, they don't have to tell you. God damn you! You may want to drink it. You may want to use it on your farm. You may want to use it on your city water supply. You have no need to know the chemicals. That's proprietary knowledge. This is corporate America. You can kiss corporate America's ass. They are not going to tell you what's in those chemicals. It is your groundwater, your earth, your planet. But it's their chemicals and their legislature and their government. So you can sit there and twirl. And if you're Josh Fox, director of the Academy Award-nominated documentary Gasland, you can be arrested for exercising your First Amendment right. He's being charged with unlawful entry. He's currently being processed. The United States Capitol Police said, well, that was this morning. And he issued the following statement. I'm going to share it with you. I was arrested today for exercising my First Amendment rights to freedom of the press on Capitol Hill. I was not expecting to be arrested for practicing journalism. Today's hearing in the House Energy and Environment Subcommittee was called to examine EPA's findings that hydraulic fracturing fluids had contaminated groundwater in the town of Pavilion, Wyoming. I have a long history with the town of Pavilion and its residents who have maintained since 2008 that fracking has contaminated their water supply. I featured the stories of residents John Fenton, Lewis Meeks, and Jeff Locker in Gasland, and I have continued to document the catastrophic water contamination in Pavilion for the upcoming sequel, Gasland 2. It was seen that the Republican leadership was using this hearing to attack the three-year Region 8 EPA investigation involving hundreds of samples and extensive water testing, which ruled that Pavilion's groundwater was a health hazard, contaminated by benzene at 50 times the safe level and numerous other contaminants associated with gas drilling. Most importantly, EPA stated in this case that fracking was the likely cause. As a filmmaker and journalist, I have covered hundreds of public hearings, including congressional hearings. It is my understanding that public speech is allowed to be filmed. Congress should be no exception. No one on Capitol Hill should regard themselves exempt from the Constitution. The First Amendment to the Constitution states explicitly, quote, Congress shall make no law that infringes on the freedom of the press, end quote. Which means that no subcommittee rule or regulation should prohibit a respectful journalist or citizen from recording a public hearing. This was an act of civil disobedience, yet done in an impromptu fashion. But at the moment, when they told me to turn off the cameras, I could not. I know my rights, and I felt it was imperative to exercise them. When I was led out of the hearing in handcuffs, John Boehner's pledge of transparency in Congress was taken out with me. The people of Pavilion deserve better. The thousands across the United States who have documented cases of water contamination in fracking areas deserve their own hearing on Capitol Hill. They deserve the chance to testify before Congress. The truth that fracking contaminates groundwater is out, and no amount of intimidation tactics, either outright challenges to science or the arrest of journalists, will put the genie back in the bottle. Such a brazen attempt to discredit and silence the EPA, the citizens of Pavilion, and documentary filmmaking will ultimately fail, and it is an affront to the health and integrity of Americans. Lastly, in defense of my profession, I will state that many, many Americans get their news from independent documentaries. The Hill should immediately move to make hearings and meetings accessible to independent journalists and not further obstruct the truth from being reported in the vivid and in-depth manner that is only achievable through long-form documentary filmmaking. I will be thinking of this event further and will post further thoughts and developments. I have been charged with unlawful entry, and my court date is February 15th. John Fox. You see how this works? And in the meantime, what do American citizens do when something like this happens? Nothing. Oh, there will be a few hundred outraged environmentalists or supporters of John Fox or fans of the movie Gasland who will send emails or letters to their member of Congress, and it will have the effect of a flea hiccup. It will do nothing. It will do nothing. So, if this experiment that began 230-some years ago in self-governance has become such an abject failure in that the power does not only does it not listen when the citizens over whom they are supposed to be exercising governance, not only do they not listen, but they have us arrested. Arrested. Since it has come to that, is it not time to bring this charade to an end and replace it with a form of government that is responsive? I mean, what do you think, Truth Seeker? Huh? What do you think? Arthur Spitzer, the head of the ACLU in Washington, said, quote, congressional committees routinely allow professional journalists to record hearings even when they don't have official press credentials. And excluding a journalist because he doesn't share the political views of the committee chair is outrageous. The Supreme Court has explained many times that censorship based on viewpoint is the clearest kind of First Amendment violation. And that seems to be what happened here. End quote.
Redefining anger management. Back to Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Come to your phone calls in just a second. Representative Gerald Nadler, Democrat of New York, told Huffington Post, I have served in the House since 1992, and I had the privilege of chairing the subcommittee on the Constitution, Civil Rights, and Civil Liberties. In all that time, I cannot recall a chair of any committee or subcommittee having ever ordered the removal of a person who was filming a committee proceeding and not being disruptive, whether or not that person was accredited. It is a matter of routine that all sorts of people photograph and record our proceedings. Most of them are not accredited. I cannot recall anyone questioning their right to be there. Now, of course, none of the broadcast networks reported this today. Not one. And, you know, you think to yourself, well, I mean, ABC was even contacted at one point. There's some question whether or not this guy, Josh Fox, was there on behalf of ABC. ABC said, no, we have nothing to do with this. No, absolutely no, nothing, not us, no, try CBS, try NBC, not us, no. Or something like that. And the day will come, of course, when CBS, NBC, and ABC will be told to get their ass out of the, quote, hearing, end quote, room. But in the meantime, you would think, wouldn't you, that brothers and sisters in journalism would have risen to Josh Fox's defense en masse as a huge, thundering herd of angry, explosive journalists beating down the doors into this hearing room saying, "How dare you expel a journalist?" No, Mike, not now, not in this country, no. The Washington Post may report on it, Huffington Post may report on it, Salon may report on it, Rolling Stone may report on it, but I doubt seriously if any of their reporters will jump up and make a dash for this committee hearing room in an act of massive civil disobedience and walk in hundreds upon hundreds of journalists, all equipped with cameras, and sit there filming. And let's see if the Capitol Police will remove hundreds upon hundreds of journalists who will arrive and chain themselves together. Oh, please, Mike. You don't think any news gathering organization would allow that, do you? Huh? And one last thing here regarding the transformers in the nuclear power plants. Prairie 2 writes, transformers fail all the time. That's why the switchyards have redundant systems. Regarding the one at Onofre, California, the smoke must have given them the impression that the yard was on fire. This would be a bad thing and calls for a full shutdown and much running and screaming. This is, of course, the problem with an extremely complicated system like a nuclear reactor. Redundant systems are often not as reliable as specified in the engineering diagram. But you can always fall back on the running and screaming. That's a system that always works, even if it does no good. Running and screaming. I wonder, I really do, and this is not some macabre game of that I play inside my own head. I don't think it is. I don't think I'm quite that insane. But I try to, based on all the information that I can pull together or have pulled together over the years in reporting on these nuclear accidents, I play this head game with myself. What will be the first one? There's one outside of Toledo in Monroe, Michigan. Toledo, my hometown, that has failed several times. The Yankee nuclear plant. It just goes on and on. There's no point in my sitting here running down the list. If you live near one, you probably know if the one you live near is on the verge of melting down or exploding or whatever the hell it's going to do, leaking radiation, spewing it out so that your children will die and you will die and your pets will die and your ground will be incapable of producing food. I mean, just check with what happened at the Fukushima nuclear reactor. Notice you don't hear anything about that anymore. It leaves the impression, well, I'm glad they took care of that. Boy, for a minute there, I thought that, that radiation was going to continue to radiate, which is what precisely it is still doing. All right, your phone calls when we come back. Stay with us if you can. I'm Mike Malloy.
Not attractive. Turn me on tonight.
It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour to your phone calls. Mark is in San Francisco. Hello, Mark.
Mike, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Great. Just getting ready for whatever comes down the road, Mike. We're in for a big war, it looks like, real soon. The Republicans are stepping it up.
Sure seems that way.
You know, with all these... right to work state initiatives that they're pulling off in looks like Arizona now and then Indiana, they're just basically coming right out and saying they're going to take out the middle class, and they're not hiding it. They're just coming out and they're just doing it.
Yeah,
you know, and like you say about the media is going to cause a revolution in this country if they think people are just going to sit back and let these Republicans come in and just run roughshod over everybody, and just no increases in taxes for the rich, and just decimate all our social programs. You know what? They got another thing coming because people aren't just going to sit back and take it.
I hope you're right, Mark. I mean, so far, with the exception of Occupy Movement and a few independent filmmakers, people are sitting back and taking it.
They are. You're right. Now the question is, how much more does the Republican Party have to do before somebody's going to, you know, this thing's going to just blow up?
I don't know.
That's the question. Now, you know, I think it's long overdue like you, Mike, but the way this Republican Party's pushing and the way they're going after voter suppression, they basically have dictators in Michigan in their cities that they call emergency managers.
Yeah.
And just this all-out assault that the media is just hiding. It's hiding this tremendous assault on the middle class, this war that the Republican Party is just going, you know, roughshod over us. And they're trying to hide it. People like Marco Rubio and guys like Alan West, who took pledges to a lobbyist, and there is, we have a democracy in this country when we have politicians that take pledges to lobbyists,
yeah,
and they turn their back on, you know, on the people that they're supposed to serve. That's what it's come to, Mike. We're at a stage in this country where there's so much going on, and there's so much wrong, and it's been wrong for years, but it's getting to the point where it's completely out of hand, and people are really getting hurt. And you know, Mike, it's the media's fault because they won't expose what's happening to our country by the perpetrators that are doing it.
That's very, very true. Mark, thank you. I appreciate your comment. It's so true. Another example of what Mark just said. Justine emailed me. Mike, excuse me, Reuters and others have reported that an ABC news crew was not allowed to film the same fracking hearing at which Josh Fox was arrested for simply being present. So let's see. Is that the second huge right-wing exploitation story from today alone that ABC's own Diane Sawyer didn't cover? Yeah, the first one being the the defunding of Planned Parenthood by this phony organization, Susan G. Komen Foundation, that continues to convince people to dress in pink and carry little teddy bears and give them money. It's pretty disgusting. And Diane Sawyer, ABC, didn't even cover that. But can you imagine this now? An ABC news crew was not allowed to film, and it doesn't even make the ABC news. Now, what does that say? Is it what Mark just said? And what you know, and what we've been talking about for years now. The only profession in this country that has constitutional protection is news gathering organizations. A free press. The right of a free press shall not be infringed. And this is what they're doing, because the press is owned outright by corporate America. Even, you know, I quote the New York Times a lot. I get a lot of good stuff out of the Times. I really do. And I think overall the New York Times, on balance, does a fairly good job. I mean, it's not, I can't sit here with my 25-cent radio program and level huge, monstrous criticisms against the New York Times. Dear God, I'm not that arrogant. But even the Times refuses to call lies, lies. Even their columnists, who in a sense are independent, their op-ed writers, refuse to, when Republicans lie, I mean, just lie, and any fifth grader can see it's a goddamn lie, whatever it is they're talking about. And the Times will not label it as such. Their style book prohibits them, I guess, from calling a liar a liar. And I guess a reason for that is they fear losing access to these thugs and murderers and killers and defrauders and this whole stinking corporate-owned government system. But there is not a news organization in the so-called mainstream media that I'm aware of that will do that, that will say, you're a dirty liar. You can leave the dirty part out, I guess, but at least say you're a liar. And the fact that ABC, of course, when ABC was first set up, it was set up by the CIA. I don't know if you all know that or not, but Capital Cities Communications that originally, do people know that, Kathy? I don't know, but the CIA needed to have control of a network. And that's where ABC comes from. But anyway, I digress. So, news gathering organizations, in this case ABC, whose film crew, who you know, you can say, okay, Josh Fox, he's not real, he's just a filmmaker. And frankly, I don't give a damn if you say that or not. Josh Fox is what he does. What he does, he has an Academy Award nominated or had a film, Gasland. He's coming out with Gasland 2. It shows what these rat bastards are doing, and he gets thrown out of a hearing. ABC gets thrown out of a hearing. What does Josh Fox do? Well, first of all, he gets arrested. Did they arrest the ABC crew? No. You know why? Because they turned tail and ran like a bunch of goddamn rabbits. That's why. And then ABC doesn't even have the strength to go on their nightly news program and talk about what happened. I mean, oh, well. Oh, well. Back to your phone calls. Derek is in Rincon, New Mexico. Hello, Derek.
Hey, Mike, why don't they just exercise the National Defense Appropriations Act and bring the military in and arrest them and just send them away somewhere where I'll never be heard from again?
Well, that may happen.
I mean, you know, where's the First Amendment as long as that thing's hanging over everybody's head now, you know?
Well, that's the thing. There are ways to gut the Constitution without, obviously, an upfront way gutting the Constitution. It can be done. It's being done. It's being done right in front of us.
On a lighter note, I was married in San Clemente, and I used to surf out there in San Onofre. San Clemente is about 4 miles just north on I-5. I don't know if you've been that way or not.
I have, yeah. I've been in in the whole San Diego area.
Surf up there a lot. And,
yeah.
But the one thing is, when you're out there surfing, catching a wave, and you're staring at that lamp, boy, it's spooky.
Yeah, well.
I'm like, the water's a little warmer there where you're surfing because they use some of that seawater to cool the
absolutely.
Cooling. But
did you come out of the water and check yourself for rashes?
Yeah, I was glowing green, you know. But this was years ago. It was about 10 years ago, so I'm sure I'm still alive, no cancer.
Well, let's hope.
But on another note, they're chipping away at your show on Sirius. They keep preempting you. With that Media Matters, and I don't know if you guys are
well. They
do.
No, it's okay. We've agreed to that. That's on there on election nights because I don't do election coverage.
Yeah.
To me, it's a total joke and a fraud, and so I don't do it. And Sirius XM has a listenership that is traveling and in their cars or wherever, and they want to hear that. And so, I have no problem with that. They
I just wanted to know, it's a real bummer when I can't get you.
Well, I understand, but that's Sirius XM feels that, like I said, like some of their listeners want to hear that, and they know that I won't do it. They offer me, will you do the election coverage? No. Okay.
No, that's the whole point. It's really disgustingly boring and just the same old stupid thing over and over again.
And Media Matters, that whole Media Matters organization, I use them as source material so often. I think it's a great website. I don't know what they do on the radio election night coverage.
It sounds like an Obama machine. I got to tell you, man. They're just very not critical of the president. And this the whole talk left on that whole station. You, Mike Fetter, are the only ones that are really going against it, and Lynn Samuels, you see what they did to her. They went for it. She was on 5 days a week, and she was the first one to be critical of Obama before he was even the president, and they moved her somewhere else for a couple days a week until she passed.
Yeah. Hey, gotta go. Derek, thank you. I appreciate your comments, and just stay with us, okay? Take care, Derek. We'll be right back.
Everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
You tell him, kid. 10 before the hour. Mike is in Salt Lake City. Listening on XM. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
Pretty good.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about the folly of right to work. What it basically is to right to work for less. And then when you have a situation when half the workplace is union and half the workplace is non-union, you know, you don't have a very effective voice in the workplace. But I mainly want to deal with the Republicans' arguments about how they're so concerned about my choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're very good at, you know, making specious arguments. But here's the two things they ignore. I have never met a doctor, a lawyer, or a dentist that's a member of their trade organizations. And what the Republicans are missing here, if the union gets so corrupt and bad, the workers can call in the NLRB and call an election and vote the union out. So their talk about choice is just plain
It's a lie.
Specious.
Oh, of course it is.
Specious,
of course. When they talk about, like, the American Enterprise Institute or whatever this collection of freaks, when they issued the press release today saying that Indiana will become a beacon of a beacon of opportunity, and this is glorious. The workers there will now have freedom. I mean, that is so Orwellian. I mean, why not just say black is white and up is down and good is bad? It's just astonishing to me, and I wonder, you know, the workers around the country who are unemployed. So many people, members of the middle class, when they hear that, do they think, yeah, well, maybe I should go along with this. Maybe I should forget the union because, you know, I don't have a job. Maybe this will get me a job. It's just a damn shame. I got an email here from From Lee in New York City, writes Mike, when labor overseas is close to free, when Foxconn in China employs child labor and has near endless work days, when a company will look you in the face and tell you that you cost three times the foreign worker plus shipping charges, then it is a choice between half wages and no wages. So what can a union do? Sadly, Lee in New York City. Now, I have an answer to that, but it's radical. It's way radical. But the answer to that would be for Americans to just stop everything. What we've been talking about for a couple of years. Just stop. Just say, no, I'm not going to buy anything today. I'm not going to go anywhere today. I'm not going to do anything. And if I don't get the attention of these capitalist bastards, then I'm going to do it tomorrow and I'm going to do it the next day. It kind of like the Montgomery bus boycott. But we won't do that. I don't know why. I guess because the pain isn't intense enough yet. Right?
Oh, right. Yeah. You're still there, Mike?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, it's just that, people nowadays, they find they're so shallow-minded that they can't, they have to take everything at face value rather than breaking it down. Like, for example, we had here in Utah a constitutional amendment to the state constitution mandating, paper ballots. And it's all pushed by the Republicans. Mm-hmm. Now, I made a mistake and I fell for it, but I talked to someone in the AFL-CIO, and what the Republicans are not telling you and what their real agenda is that their corporatist friends want to do is they don't want card check, because if you call in the union and do the traditional, paper balloting, that gives management more time and more room to turn around and make your life a misery if you want to bring in the union.
Mm-hmm.
That's what their corporatist agenda is really is. But they tell the big lie. Oh, we're concerned about your right of privacy. Oh, like hell if you are. I mean, look at your record, Republican. You're against the non-union working people. You're against the raising the minimum wage, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we all know, I'm sure you do, Mike, that the right wing in this country has totally destroyed language. Nothing means what the words used to mean any longer when these issues are discussed. Telling a woman that she must now, if she requests an abortion from her physician, for whatever reason, it's nobody's business except hers. The doctor is her medical advisor, and hopefully the person who assisted in producing the pregnancy. Those are the only people that should be involved. But telling a woman that now you must submit to an ultrasound of this collection of cells inside you before you can have an abortion, and then telling the woman that this is so that she can make an informed consent as to whether or not she wants to proceed with the procedure is such a lousy, insane, filthy lie. If a woman or a man and their physician cannot make together an informed decision, and then to have the government, in this case the state of Virginia, step in and say, okay, well, we will help you. This is madness. This is insanity. And I would think that every physician in the state of Virginia, now that this is going to, or either has or is going to become law, that every physician in any of these states where these laws are passed would say, are you out of your goddamn minds? What do you think I am? I am this person's physician. I will assist her in making an informed decision about a medical procedure, not some tin-ass legislator. I'm getting angry again. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Listen, after that meltdown I had last night, I found this. This is from a state senator in Virginia. Her name is Janet Howell. She's a Democrat from Fairfax, Virginia. And she is another legislator around the country who is not really thrilled with the fact that the Republican Christian religious fanatic majority is trying to push through all kinds of bills, further isolating women, demonizing women. This treatment of women has its roots deep in the three religions of the book, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Truth is, all three religions hate women because they're terrified of them. And I've said many times that they have tried so hard, these religious fanatics, to diminish women to the point of insisting that the first mother was a father. the first person to give birth was a male. Anyway, the assault on females by the religious right, whether it doesn't make any difference if it's Islam, Judaism, Christianity, and all its many and perverted forms, it doesn't make any difference. These religions seek to diminish woman to the point where she is, a handmaid. There was a book about that, I think. So Janet Howell, a Democrat in Fairfax, Virginia, doesn't think much of a bill that's being introduced or has been introduced in that state, like it has in many states, that would require women to have an ultrasound before they undergo an abortion. You know, this is another one of those, look, you're going to kill a baby! So when this legislation came up for a preliminary vote in the Virginia Senate, 2 days ago, Monday, Senator Janet Howell offered a floor amendment that was a real poke in the eye to her colleagues. Her amendment, she read it aloud. This is what it said, quote, prior to prescribing medication for erectile dysfunction, a physician shall perform a digital rectal examination and a cardiac stress test. Informed consent for these procedures shall be given at least 24 hours before the procedures are performed. End quote. So, boys, you want some of that ED medicine? Can't get it up anymore, or any less, or whatever. I don't know why. We can't have this many males who cannot get a penile erection. It's my understanding. I have some friends who take this little blue pill. It's my understanding that it's used for other things. But I digress. That's a whole different. Yeah, I don't even want to get into that topic. So prior to getting your prescription filled, whether you have ED or not. What the hell is erectile dysfunction? it won't stay still. Prior to getting your prescription, you have to go through a digital rectal exam and a cardiac stress test. Because, they say, don't they, on the commercials, you cannot watch television for 30 minutes after 4 o'clock in the afternoon without seeing commercial after commercial after commercial for this stuff. Man, there must really be a problem in this country. Men, is it true? I mean, I understand that there is a syndrome, a condition, erectile dysfunction, that usually comes from prostate surgery or maybe some sort of a bladder malfunction, or I'm not saying what. Nerve damage, yeah. Car accident, gunshot wound. You know, I'm not saying that such a thing doesn't exist. What I'm saying is the pharmaceutical companies hit an absolute gold mine when they came up with this little blue pill, and it's copy drugs now. Because the idea that millions upon millions upon millions of adult males, and not just here, but adult males, just can't get it up anymore. You know, men who are in their 20s and 30s and 40s, are you kidding me? But it's capitalism. And just like the Susan G. Komen Foundation is capitalism in its rawest form, an exploitative system that takes a true human condition and turns it into a money-making machine. It's just goddamn disgusting. I mean, but I way digress here. So what Senator Janet Howell in the Virginia Assembly is saying is that we should have a little gender equality here, or gender equity, I believe is the term she used. A digital rectal exam and a cardiac stress test. Because all of these commercials tell you, don't take this pill if you can't handle regular sexual activity. The amendment failed, but not by much. According to the Washington Post, it was a 19-21 vote. It only failed by 2 votes. By the way, the ultrasound bill, one of many conservatives are pushing during this year, and all these, remember all the state houses that wound up in the hands of these crazy goddamn Republicans in 2010? Remember all that, huh? Hundreds and thousands of Republicans took over. This is a result. Here you go. Anyway, the Republican-controlled Senate in Virginia is expected to approve the vote on ultrasounds later this week. The bill requiring a digital rectal exam and a cardiac stress test prior to getting a ED medication prescription is, that bill is dead. Women. I found something the other day. It was an article written by Sarah Ritchie about, there was an announcement, the Vatican announced the creation of something called the Personal Ordinate, Ordinariate, there you go, of the Chair of St. Peter. The Personal Ordinariate of the Chair of St. Peter. That's a special division of the Roman Catholic Church now that former Episcopal congregants and congregations and priests can enter, because the Anglican Church, or the Episcopal Church, is getting way too liberal. Some of them even acknowledge the humanity of homosexuals. Oh, Lord have mercy! So the Roman Catholic Church, always looking for more money and, more recruits for their pedophilic priests, have said to the Episcopal congregations and priests, okay, look, you can come over here. You can come join us. We're not that different. Hadn't it been for Henry VIII, then none of this would happen anyway. But come on over. Now, they're including married priests. The Vatican is stressing that the allowance for these married priests is merely an exception and by no means a permanent condition of the priesthood. No. Don't any of you Catholics get any ideas. No. If a priest is single when he enters this ordinariate, he may not marry. Nor may a married priest, if his wife dies, remarry. So that's the setup. The Roman Catholic Church is prepared to house married priests in numbers not seen since the years before 1123. I'll explain that to you when we come back. I'm always choking from the smell of stale perfume. And that cigarette you're smoking, I'll scare me half to death. Open up the window, sucker, and you'll catch my breath.
just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So, why do these three religions, the three people of the book, hate women so much? There are many reasons, but as far as the Catholics are concerned, in 1123, there was something adopted by the first Lateran Council, or Lateran Council. It was Canon 21, and that prohibited clerical marriage. And as Sarah Ritchie points out in her essay here, the status of the priest's wife is perhaps even more strange and unsettling than that of her ordained Catholic husband. Listen to some of this. While the early Christian church praised priestly chastity, mandating priestly celibacy, it didn't mandate priestly celibacy until the reform movement of the 11th century. At that point, the foremost purpose of priestly celibacy was to clearly distinguish and separate the priest from the laity, to elevate the status of the clergy. In this scheme, the mere presence of the priest's wife confounded that goal, and thus she incurred the suspicion and quite often the loathing of parishioners and church reformers. You can't help but wonder what feelings she might inspire today. But by the time of the first Lateran Council, the priest's wife had become a symbol of wantonness and defilement. The reason was that during this period, the nature of the host consecrated at Mass received greater theological scrutiny. Medieval theologians were in the process of determining that bread and wine, at the moment of consecration in the hands of an ordained priest at the altar, truly became the body and blood of Jesus Christ. The priest who handled the body and blood of Christ should therefore be uncontaminated, lest he defile the sacred corpus. The priest's wife was an obvious danger. Her wanton desire, suggested the 11th century monk Peter Damian, threatened the efficacy of consecration. He chastised priests' wives as, quote, furious vipers who out of ardor of impatient lust decapitate Christ, the head of clerics, with their lovers. According to the historian Diane Elliott, priests' wives were perceived as raping the altar, a perpetration not only of the priest, but also of the whole Christian community. You dirty women! The priest's nuclear family was also seen as a risk to the stability of the church. His children represented a threat to laypersons who feared that their endowment might be absorbed into the hands of the priest's offspring to create a rival clerical dynasty. Ooh, this is all about the love of Jesus, isn't it? A celibate priest would thus ensure donations from the neighboring landed aristocracy. Furthermore, the priest's wife was often accused, along with her children, of draining the church's resources with her extravagance and frivolity. Pope Leo IX attempted to remedy this problem in the 11th century by decreeing that the wives and children of priests must serve in his residence, the Pope's residence, at the Lateran Palace in Rome. Oh, there's more. Sarah Ritchie says, given all this history, I caution the clerical wife to be on guard. That said, for the time being, it will be prudent for the Vatican to honor the dignity of the wives and children of this, of its freshly ordained married priests, you know, the Episcopalians. And therefore, and here, she says, I suggest a real conversation about the continuation of priestly celibacy might begin. Until then, priests' wives should beware a religious tradition that views them, in the words of Damien, as, quote, the cleric's charmers, devil's choice tidbits, expellers from paradise, virus of mind, sword of soul, wolfbane to drinkers, poison to companions, material of sinning, occasion of death, the female chambers of the ancient enemy, of hoopoes, of screech owls, of night owls, of she-wolves, of bloodsuckers. End quote. This is how the Christian church, which is a derivative of the Jewish religion, and the Islamic faith, which is also a derivative of the Jewish faith, all three of them, this is how women are viewed. Bringers of death, expellers from paradise, bloodsuckers. Ha! Ha! And you wonder why millions of women were burned at the stake across Europe in the time of the ascendancy of the church.
Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
25 before the hour. You know, I've always wondered if imams and priests and rabbis feel this anti-woman bias. I guess they do about their own mothers or their female family members. I guess they do. What a perverted, sick philosophy. I mean, it just is. Oh, and guess what? It is Wednesday, right? Prayer meeting night. Did you see this stunning article in the New York Times the other day in the science section? I think most of us, going all the way back to our high school years, if not before that, understood that at one time there were two species of humans that wandered the earth, the Homo sapiens and the Neanderthals. Now, how that was explained by the church-going people, I have no idea, because, you know, it didn't say God created, in Genesis, which is what all three religions use, it doesn't say God created two different kinds of, you know, humans. It just doesn't say that. And the Bible, of course, is inerrant, right? This is what the fundamentalists would tell you, whether they're Jewish, Muslim, Christian. Of course, the Jews have spent, you know, thousands of years trying to understand it. The Christians have it all figured out, and the Muslims, they're still wandering around trying to figure out who they are. But the creation myth in Genesis is very explicit. God created one, according to this mythology, God created one creature that was just like him. Like God. Created him in his own image. Looked just like him. And then the rest, you know, blah, 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 blah. But the rest of the creation myth. But How do I explain the Neanderthals? Now, I don't know how that was done. I have no idea. I never paid attention. As soon as I was old enough to really, truly, honestly think for myself, I got as far away from the church business as I could possibly get and remain on this planet. Because to me, it is vile and violent. All of it. Every bit of it. But now, ta-da! Something has been found in a cold Siberian cave that when paired with faster and cheaper genetic sequencing technology is helping scientists draw a surprisingly complex new picture of human origins. It's a 40,000-year-old finger. Well, in the first place, any good Christian, Muslim, or Jew will tell you 40,000 years ago there was only the void. So all of this is made up. This is a plot. None of it ever happened. The New York Times is an organ of the devil, apparently. But let's just say that they're onto something here. Now, the view or the opinion of scientists that are coming as a result of the incredibly quick and cheap genetic sequencing and this 40,000-year-old finger, the new view is supplanting the traditional idea that modern humans marched out of Africa about 50,000 years ago, replacing all other types that had gone before. Now, the best book on that story is the book African Genesis, written, 45 years ago. It's a great book. Robert Ardrey, who is a playwright. In fact, he was not an anthropologist or paleoanthropologist. He was a playwright. But if you ever get a chance, read African Genesis. Now, it was written long before DNA sequencing. DNA was recognized, I think, this would have been late 60s. The element of DNA, Critchfield, and who's the other guy? Wasn't that discovered in the 50s? In the late 50s, I think? It was a long time ago.
Watson and Crick.
Oh, Crick? Boy, you're just too smart by a factor of 10.
Many apologies.
But wasn't that back in the 50s? When they were able... Never mind.
I think so. You mean when they discovered...
The double helix.
DNA. The structure of DNA.
Yeah, the structure. How it was structured. Okay. Anyway, what the genetic analysis is showing that modern humans encountered and mated with at least two other groups of humans in relatively recent times. The Neanderthals, who lived in Europe and Asia, died out about 30,000 years ago, and a mysterious group known as the Denisovans, Denisovans, D-E-N-I-S-O-V-A-N-S, Denisovans. They lived in Asia and most likely vanished about the same time as the Neanderthals did. However, the DNA from these other two groups lives on, even though the Denisovans and the Neanderthals are extinct. Chris Stringer, a paleoanthropologist who is the research leader in human origins at the Natural History Museum in London, said, in a sense, we are a hybrid species. What? We are a hybrid. Oh, no. But wait a minute. It says in Genesis. The Denisovans were first described a year ago in a paper in the journal Nature. And it was made possible, the description of who these humans were, by genetic sequencing of this finger. And they determined it's a female finger bone. And an oddly shaped molar from a young adult. Scientists are trying to envision how this happened, the ancient couplings, you know, having sex, and they probably did it with no prophylactics whatsoever, no birth control. They just got together and did the beast with two backs dance. But scientists now want to know when this took place, where it took place, how it happened, how many of these sexual encounters produced offspring. and what effect these archaic genes have on humans today. And other scientists are trying to learn more about the Denisovans, who they were, where they lived, how they became extinct. Apparently, they're from what is now China, southern China. And there was a fourth group, of course, the Homo floresiensis. Or there was a group, Homo, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, floresiensis, nicknamed the Hobbits because they were so small. And they were discovered on the Indonesian island, their remains, I should say, on the Indonesian island of Flores. Four kinds of humans? Four? But! The Homo floresiensis became extinct about 17,000 years ago. The Neanderthals about 30,000 years ago. The Denisovans about 30,000 years ago. And what was left are Homo sapiens. Homo sapiens, that's us. Now, what does this do to the creation myth of the three people of the book? What does it do? Or does it do nothing? Is it meaningless? Not to me. For many scientists, the epicenter of the emerging story on human origins in the Denisova cave in the Altai Mountains of Siberia, where the young girl's finger bone was discovered, it is the only place on the planet where three types of humans, Denisovan, Neanderthal, and modern, lived. Probably not all at once, but they all lived there. And a paleoanthropologist at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, whose lab is examining the archaic genomes, visited the cave in July. He reported, his name is John Hawks, he reported it has a high arched roof, almost like a Gothic cathedral, and a chimney to the sky, adding that being there was like walking in the footsteps of our ancestors, plural. The cave has been open to the elements for a quarter of a million years. Well, that's impossible, Mike! A quarter of a million years! What are you talking about? And is rich with layers of sediments that may contain other surprises. And by the way, the average temperature for the year in this cave is 32 degrees Fahrenheit. And that bodes well for the preservation of archaic DNA. Well. Now, I've always been fascinated ever since I read anything by the Leakey family, their discoveries about the woman or the pre-woman, Lucy, the Homo erectus. I guess she was one of the first. They started referring to her cutely as Eve, the mother of the human species. But all of these, you know, the out of Africa theory, who were the Neanderthals? Now, who in the hell were the Denisovans? The fact that there were three different species of human beings living all at the same time, possibly. And what that does to these creation myths.
Keep the lunas on the path. tea is in the hall. The lunatics are in our hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor.
It's about 9 before the hour. Kind of love that album. hard to believe it was made 40 years ago? No. So, there you have it. Neanderthals. Denisovans. And Homo sapiens, all you know, sharing the planet, all human species, different human species, all sharing the planet. What they're also what they've discovered here, one of the people doing the research on this, a geneticist at Harvard Medical School, David Reich. Let's call it Reich. Dr. Reich and his team have determined through the patterns of archaic DNA replications that a small number of half Neanderthal, half modern human hybrids walked the earth between 46 and 67,000 years ago. The half Denisovan and half modern humans that contributed to our DNA were more recent. And an immunologist at the Stanford University School of Medicine has used an analysis of modern and ancient immune system genetic components, the alleles. You know about that, don't you, Kathy? The alleles, to figure out that one of the Denisovan modern couplings most likely took place in what is now southeastern China, behind a disco that... No, I made that part up. He has also found some evidence that a Neanderthal modern pair mated in West Africa. Woo! Lord have mercy! And there was nobody there to make sure they got married! The Neanderthals and the Denisovans had lived in Europe and Asia, according to this, for many thousands of years before modern humans showed up. But studying the the traces in immune systems, the alleles, the genetic components, a genetic component of ancient immune systems, alleles, gives them, what? What, am I saying it wrong? I don't know, is that what?
You're saying allele, fine, but an allele is not an ancient part of your immune system. It's a different form of a gene that is located at a specific point on a chromosome called a locus. See, there are two alleles for each trait. When you're studying
well,
genetics...
Well, I'll be damned. This immunologist at Stanford University has used an analysis of modern and ancient immune system genetic components, alleles.
Right, but they're not just components of your immune system. Study genetic evolution, you're studying the frequency of alleles. These are traits. Mendel, you know the monk, Mendel? He discovered this. It's called the law of segregation. It is how you trace something back to your ancient biological roots, but it doesn't have anything to do with your immune system. I just wanted to make that clear. It's not like lymph fluid or lymph nodes or killer T cells or white blood cells. I mean, it's not... Alleles aren't part of your immune system.
Shouldn't you be boxing up Girl Scout cookies or something?
I just don't want somebody to write you and say, "Now, Mike, alleles aren't part of your immune system."
Don't you have?
I mean, they are part of your immune system, but they're also part of your circulatory system and your reproductive system and your respiratory system and your digestive system and your central nervous system and your peripheral nervous system. And
don't you have your brownie girls meeting tomorrow night?
I'm going to go knit something now.
Huh?
I'm going to go knit something.
I think you ought to address some of these boxes of Girl Scout cookies.
I'll work on that. I'll be in the kitchen.
Now, where was I? Before I was rudely interrupted by someone who obviously is a hell of a lot smarter than I am. I don't know about this stuff. You know,
I come by my atheism honestly. I mean, it was the course in evolutionary biology that I took in college that was like, that's it. You know, no more cloud beings for me. So
well,
I was fascinated by
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but you didn't know anything about Denisovans until I just brought it up.
This is true.
There
I
you
had
go.
No idea.
So, no, it is. It's okay to be married to someone way smarter than you are about certain things. I mean, I don't have any problem with that. I just, you know, you should be happy I pronounced the damn word right. Because it doesn't look like it would be pronounced alleles. It's A-L-E-L-E-S or something. Is that right? I spelled it right. You know how I pronounced it right? I went to dictionary.com. Ha ha! And hit the pronouncer. Alleles. All right. Well, I just thought I'd throw that in since it is Wednesday night. It is church night here on the Molloy program. I guess I would much prefer. No, I wouldn't. I was going to say much prefer the simpler times when I go to prayer meeting with my grandparents on Wednesday evening, and we go to the upper room of the Calvary Baptist Church, and there would be 25 or 30 adults there and me, and they would all be praying for the health and safety of President Truman, and stuff like that, and praying for the dead and the soon to be dead. And, the window would be open. It'd be a warm summer night. Occasional fly would buzz in, and I just would sit there and think, oh man, what are they doing? But it was a lot simpler. Now I have to worry about Denisovans. Thank you for the explanation, Kathy, on alleles. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Molloy.
As a proud